Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Under quarantine, phase two-ish. It's a big building, it's mostly abandoned. Sometimes Mike Sheckles comes here. You might have seen him on Common Room. Sometimes he'll pop in, and I immediately run away to get my mask because I thought I was totally alone. But generally abandoned, and I generally feel alone. But it's 2020, so what are you gonna do? And I'm not technically alone today because it is Wednesday, so we've got JR Jackson. JR, welcome back to the show.
I feel like the weeks just go by faster and faster. It was just yesterday that I was on a takeover show on TDR, completely overrun. Yeah. Some guy left town, so I was like, hey, I'll do it. And we're already back on for another JR Wednesday. This is fun. I like it.
You did. Yeah, that was a fast turnaround. So you stepped in and you did the show with Adrian. What was it like taking the reins and leading an episode of the Damage Report?
I'll tell you this. I really need to educate myself on the jargon, the vocabulary, everything that surrounds the giving that happens on Twitch. I've said it every time I've done a Twitch show through TYT. But you know, the subs and the gifts and the givings and the whatever's given, I tried to read it, and I feel like the people who gave were like, I'll just forget it. Just yeah, I'd rather you not say my name associated with whatever you were just saying about it. that was my biggest hang up, I gotta be honest. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, that's a waste of whatever I gave, because this guy totally butchered first my name and then secondly what I just gave.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to keep up. I know most of the lingo, but I haven't had any time whatsoever for a few months now to really play any games. So I do feel like I might be slipping away from that. Like there's been these huge trendy like waves of games that everybody's playing and like making memes about, and I haven't even touched it. So I'm feeling like I'm getting more like disconnected from everything. But not from the audience. You know why? Because we are going to be responding to your super chats, comments, Twitches, Twitters, all of that stuff as we go on. Both JR and I will be responding, so feel free to send those in. We've got a lot of stories that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be responding to some of Trump's town hall from yesterday. He spoke with George Stephanopoulos. He made noises anyway. It was something like speech. How did he do? We're going to get the defensive reaction almost immediately from Fox News. But then also, more importantly, update on the ICE facility whistleblower story that we talked about yesterday on the show. We've got more anti-maskers. We've got the weaponization of Trump's Bob Woodward comments from those interviews from throughout the early parts of the pandemic and more. It's a lot. And you know what would be nice? Even more people joining us to watch it. And the only way that's gonna happen is if you like the stream, maybe share it. Do whatever it is that Google and or Facebook and Twitter and all that want you to do for people to know that this is actually going on. We don't have billionaires boosting our streams, but I think that you will provide a nice replacement for that. And with that, JR, why don't we jump into our first stories?
Love it.
Since it was revealed that Donald Trump did a series of interviews with journalist Bob Woodward and said that he always was downplaying the pandemic, you've had to wonder, once he actually has to answer for that in front of real people, how is that gonna go? So last night was the first time in this town hall that he had to do that. So here you have him being asked a question about that downplaying of this horrendous pandemic.
Oh, hi, my question is, if you believe it's the president's responsibility to protect America, why would you downplay a pandemic that is known to disproportionately harm low-income families and minority communities?
Yeah, well, I didn't downplay it. I actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action. My action was very strong. Yeah, because what I did was with China, I put a ban on, with Europe, I put a ban on. And we would have lost thousands of more people had I not put the ban on. So that was called action, not with the mouth, but in actual fact. We did a very, very good job when we put that ban on. Whether you call it talent or luck, it was very important. So we saved a lot of lives when we did that.
There were holes in the ban, and the European ban didn't come for another month.
Okay, so look, he referred, as he has been for months, constantly to the fact that he sort of mostly initiated a ban against travel from China after the virus was already in America. And he does that because that's the only thing that he can point to. And it was the easiest thing to do. The dude was passing travel bans on a monthly basis leading into the pandemic. So that does not actually address her concern at all. That individual wanted to know why he described himself that he was downplaying it. She tried to follow up and acknowledge that it was his words that he did that. And he did what he did. He just talked over her, and she eventually gave up and sat down because he didn't give a damn about her concerns. He just wanted to talk about his ban.
Well, okay, so there's multiple, this one wasn't circulated as much yesterday, but if he wants to talk about how his plan of action was best, he did all these bans on China, and that's actually what happened. Despite what he said he was gonna do with the American people, as far as information he's given us, with his actions. Okay, fine, he wants to try and, that's gonna appeal to his voters who are trying to find something to grasp a hold of, right? That's honestly the objective here, because everyone who understands what he said and did is gonna understand what he said and did, and nothing that he can say now can change it. You just have to explain it, which he won't do. We know that. But the thing that came out yesterday that I'm not sure if the questioner or if maybe even Stephanopoulos brought up, this also happened in April. There's more tapes from the Woodward conversations where he said again, this thing's a killer. You wouldn't believe how easily transmissible it is. He said these things months after he originally said he's gonna downplay it. That's more revelations about how bad this is. But days after having those revelations, that truth to Bob Woodward, he then goes on and tells people that are protesting in what, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, those several states or around that area, hey, bring freedom to your country, bring freedom to your states. Congratulations, get out there and fight this stay at home orders. And the invisible enemy's in full retreat. He said all these things days after acknowledging how easily transmissible and much of a killer this thing is again. So you can talk about your travel bans, you can talk about your Chinese opposition and how much you want to associate it strictly with them. But we see in more tapes and more audio recordings what you said in private versus what you're telling people to do in public. I don't care about your ban. You're telling people once in April, it's here. So your ban didn't mean anything at this point anymore. So people are going out in the streets to protest this thing being fake, and you're egging that on. Why did you do that?
Yeah, 100%. And I don't want to panic people. Okay, don't go out and tell people to purchase every roll of toilet paper, you know, that you can find. That would be a positive way to tell people not to panic. But telling people it's gonna go away, you don't have to worry, no action is needed, is not reassuring. Okay, and even if it were, certainly not the cost of so many additional people that have died. We are surrounded every day with people who don't take the virus seriously. You could draw a direct line to the rhetoric of Trump campaign officials and Fox News hosts on that. We'll be showing you some of those individuals later. And I love that you mentioned, you know, the fact that, you know, behind the scenes from one day to publicly the next day, his messaging was completely changing. That's gonna hurt him. And we're at the close of the show, we're gonna have an ad that mashes up some of that. But really fast, just on a fact check, remember fact checks when facts mattered? He said, I didn't downplay it, I upplayed it. Remember, because he has the best words and the best mind, he's not losing it. Okay, well, let's see, let's go to the Woodward tapes. What did he actually say? Not in Woodward's words or not anonymous source. What did he say? Here you go.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
He downplayed it. I always want to be downplaying it. No, sorry, that doesn't look good anymore. Now I upplayed it. I upplayed it. No, you upplay some things, whatever that means. You upplay Antifa, like, you know, because it's not actually a threat. You up it to here and pretend that it is. You do that all the time. The threat of getting cancer from a windmill, for instance, that's not actually a threat, but you upplay it to pretend that it is. That's not at all what you did with this. And she was 100% right to ask that question. You can talk over her and hope that it'll go away, but those quotes aren't gonna go away. They're gonna be in 100 ads between now and election day. And I think it's right for people to be concerned about that. We should be.
So maybe he set up this dynamic where you'd have to ask him specifically, okay, so you say that your travel ban is the reason why you've saved millions of lives based off of nothing. But so what about what you've told the American people the way they should act once it was already here? Because that was part of the problem, it was already here. As people saw it coming, you ignored it. So once it was here, you didn't do anything about what Americans then have to deal with as it's on our shores. So it's all here. Now, what was your responsibility to tell the American people? So now we got to break it down to this specific. Okay, fine, you can clarify it your way. What did you tell the Americans that were while you downplayed it? Because that's the specific question that he can skirt around as long as he has a limited amount of time just to filibuster for a second and allow the next question to get asked.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, that was hardly the craziest thing he said. We're gonna go to others. I just wanna reassure the individual in the chat that said, a windmill doesn't cause cancer, John. I know. I know. That's my whole thing, is knowing it doesn't cause cancer. Okay, let's move on to other misinformation that he was spreading right there. One of the campaign themes of Donald Trump's reelection is apparently not knowing who the president is. Like, they keep pointing to things that are going on right now and saying that this is Joe Biden's fault in some way. So they've been doing that, but they've also got that for the pandemic as well. So take a look at Trump laying the blame on Democrats for not doing something that they can't do.
The wearing of masks has proven to lessen the spread of COVID. Why don't you support a mandate for national mask wearing? And why don't you wear a mask more often?
Well, I do wear them when I have to and when I'm in hospitals and other locations. But I will say this, they said at the Democrat convention, they're gonna do a national mandate. They never did it because they've checked out and they didn't do it. And a good question is, you ask, like Joe Biden, they said, we're gonna do a national mandate on masks.
He's called on all governors to have them. It is a state responsibility.
Well, no, but he didn't do it. I mean, he never did it.
So I don't know what we're supposed to say. So the Democrats were going to impose a nationwide mask mandate and they didn't do it. Well, that's true. They didn't do it. None of them, last time I checked, were president, so couldn't do it. Biden has occasionally said that he might do that depending on the situation with the pandemic when he becomes president. But JR, how are we supposed to respond to that? And is that convincing? Is that persuasive to his base? Yeah, no, Joe Biden didn't do that. That's true. Is that how they're responding to quotes like that?
Yes. Yes, and of course, and my, you know, my examples are based strictly off of Twitterers, which 50% are real people and 50% aren't. But either way it goes, we know that that's the point that's getting pushed. Whether or not whoever's pushing it, the fact you see this coordinated message that goes out consistently, you know that it's been created somewhere and then presented to be taken, you know, to be spread to the masses this way. And that's definitely one of them. What about Biden's response to it? I've seen that many times. What about Biden's response to the coronavirus? What about what he wanted to do? He can say all he wants. Hey, you know, John Adarola also daily talks about what we should do with the coronavirus, but I don't think he can do anything about it except tell you and probably try and educate you on where the facts are. From there, we need our elected leaders. Again, no, maybe it's split in some kind of way. Either he doesn't know how elected officials and how our democracy works, or he doesn't care. I'm not sure which one it is, but he's like, well, who cares about who can do something? I wanna do it, so I'm gonna do it. And somehow he thinks he controls everything. And so similarly, well, Joe Biden, he wants to control everything. How come he can't just control it from here? I don't know. I really think there's holes in his logic of how he gets from A to B. So once we all get to B with him, we're like, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. I feel this like existential dread when I see things like that. And it would be one thing if it was like Trump was campaigning on this the first time and he got 3% of the vote in the Republican primary. That would be like, oh good, what do you know? That sort of stuff isn't gonna play. But he's already president. He has a very good chance of becoming president again. And he's campaigning against the idea that the person he's running against is the one who's actually president already. But this is kind of like a consistent thing, because They wanted to run before they had control of literally everything. They wanted to run against government. They were outsiders running against government. Then once they became president, had control of the Supreme Court, the Senate and all of that. Now it's the deep state. So sure, now we've taken control, but there's another layer. So they liked the idea of running against the radical left. Well, the radical left didn't win the primary, but don't worry, Joe Biden's secretly controlled by the radical left. Joe Biden's already president. He's responsible for the riots and all of that. It's like so everything fundamentally is just whatever they want it to be. And that would be one thing if they were losing running like that, but it really does seem to be working. And it's like trying to explain basic concepts to people and they just respond that Brando has electrolytes. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that because we don't seem in the same reality. Joe Biden isn't president right now, okay? He isn't, okay? You can criticize him for what he's saying he'll do, whether that's inadequate or maybe going in the wrong direction. You can do all of that. That's generally how campaigns have been run. You can't criticize him for not handling situations that were your exclusive province because you're the goddamn president.
Yeah, I mean, he's already done with Obama as well.
But I'm wrong.
He's like, yeah, they brought up Obama and why he hasn't addressed certain things that happened during during Trump's administration. So it's, you know, it's an ongoing approach because people don't know when one thing happened versus another. So as long as they just say it, they know a certain percentage of their support base is gonna buy it. That's just all there is to it. They're there to take something in, to eat up and try to regurgitate to everyone else in his defense.
You know, so the bad things that are happening now are Biden's fault in the future. So the riots are Biden's future fault. Okay, because that's right now, he doesn't like it, so he gives it to Biden in the future. Things he does want, he just takes. So Veterans Choice, he passed that, even though that was passed under Obama and signed by Obama. So he took from the past the things that he wants. He's basically, his time frame is 3 years of time travel in either direction. What if he were to go further? Like, if he were to literally say, I won the Vietnam War, what would Fox News, what would their coverage of that be? Like, if you were to poll, if you were to talk to Trump fans at a Trump rally a week after he said, I won the Vietnam War, I don't know, maybe it'd be enough. I try to come up with these all the time, and I honestly don't know what would actually be enough to get through to people, because
nothing,
because the 3 years could become five or could become 10 at some point. I honestly don't know at this point.
Yeah, none of them, because if you could have predicted that in talking about the coronavirus and that he would step in front of the podium and tell people to ingest disinfectants and it'll clean that whole thing out. If you would have predicted that he would have, yes, that's his motion. If you would have predicted that he would have gone earlier this year and downplayed it and said, oh, we got 15 cases, it's just gonna be gone. Or if you'd have predicted it, he said, it is what it is. The fact that hundreds of thousands of Americans have died under his watch and under his ineptitude, you'd have been like, well, that would have been enough. We have about a 25 to 30 different things that he's done just in the past 6 months that you could have said before those 6 months happened, if President Trump does this, enough of his people will finally throw up their hands and go, I can't take it anymore. But we've seen those things. Come up with anything. Come up with anything, they're gonna find an excuse and something to say. So if he says, yeah, I alone won the Vietnam War, what they're gonna say is, oh, first of all, we did win the Vietnam War. And what he meant to say was we. He's such an American. When he says I, he means we as Americans. That's what they would say. And they would recreate history and say that we won the Vietnam War. They would straight up say it. They just would. You think they haven't recreated history on everything else?
Yeah.
They have.
They're creative in that very limited way. I don't really produce much art, but they can square that particular circle. Okay, let's move on to the next bit. This is just, I mean, we could play 20 of these. I'm gonna limit myself to one, but here you go. Trump at the town hall was asked about mask wearing by an individual who was being responsible and wearing a mask and wanting him to show leadership on that. And he just ranted against masks. Now I want you to watch this. And you're going to be tricked by some of the context of it. You're gonna look at this video and you're gonna see an individual in a suit. He's gonna be on a stage and there's gonna be like a lot of like a nice accoutrement in the room. But just imagine that you were on a bar stool sitting next to this guy in some dive bar and he said word for word, everything Donald Trump says here. And you tell me if it doesn't actually work. Here you go.
Now, there is, by the way, a lot of people don't want to wear masks. There are a lot of people think the masks are not good. And there are a lot of people that, as an example,
who you have- Who are those people?
Well, I'll tell you who those people are. Waiters, they come over and they serve you and they have a mask. And I saw it the other day where they were serving me. And they're playing with a mask. I'm not blaming them, I'm just saying what happens. They're playing with a mask, so the mask is over and they're touching it and then they're touching the plate. That can't be good. There are a lot of people, if you look at Dr. Fauci's original statement, you look at a lot of people, CDC, you look at a lot of people's original statement, they said very strongly, George, don't wear masks. Then all of a sudden they went to wear masks. The concept of a mask is good, but it also does, you're constantly touching it, you're touching your face, you're touching plates. There are people that don't think masks are good.
I'm still waiting for the answer.
Audience, you're now stupider because of that. No, but there was an answer. I don't know what the question is. I don't know where he lived, but no, there was an answer. Some people don't like it. And who? Waiters, because you touch it and then you touch a thing. And so it would be better, by the way, to just not have a mask at all then, okay? Because if you're gonna touch it, then you should just be breathing directly the germs in other people's faces. And yeah, some people don't like it. And at one point, Fauci apparently wanting people to not buy up the entire supply of PPE and making it impossible for medical professionals to have it, told people not to purchase masks very briefly. And then for the last 6.5 months, every responsible medical professional in America has been telling people in chorus to wear them. Nope, sorry, that first week, one person sort of got it wrong. So I'm just gonna say that until the end of my days. That's the most bar stool sitting thing right there. What a stupid, pointless dodge. You know it's healthier. That's why you're not going near anyone who doesn't wear a mask. You've said that to reporters. That's why at your rally, you've got a ton of sheep out there breathing germs on each other, and you're far away from that, secluded. Okay, so you know exactly how important it is.
Absolutely. He says it a lot.
Move a couple of things down. Basically.
let's keep it real. Every anecdotal story that Trump has about any interaction he's had with a normal human being is a straight up bald faced lie. It just is. So what restaurant were you at? Like, this is when you start, because I know a lot of liars. Just ask him a couple of specifics. Just ask him simple specifics about this interaction that they had. Restaurant, you were at a restaurant, Mr. Trump? You had an interaction with a waiter at a restaurant, Mr. Trump? Really? What restaurant was this? When did you go? Who were you with? What did you eat? Why were you doing this? There was a restaurant that you went to and we didn't hear about all the Secret Service that was surrounding you as you went to a restaurant? Because we know even presidential candidates, before their presidents run in normal times, and they go to these events, they go to like cookouts, and there's something up in, I don't know, in like the Midwest where they eat a big hot dog, which none of them should ever do. It's like a tradition. Oh, they all eat like a corn dog. We see this every cycle, don't we? They do these things, and those things get media attention. You think the president of the United States, this president who doesn't like being around people, as you pointed out how he said at his rally, and is afraid of catching coronavirus, is going to a restaurant and is speaking to a waiter, which, by the way, he didn't give us this interaction with the waiter. He just said, who dislikes it? Waiters, because they pull these things down. Did the waiter say, I can't stand this? Did he say, I'm over pulling this mask down? Did he say, I can't breathe? Did he say any of those things to you? Very simple follow-up questions would allow us to show all the holes in his BS story. He's got such, he's such a bad liar. I don't know how he even gets away with it. It's obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, and think about, like, I love, Fox News does this constantly. It's, we're gonna tell you what some people think about something, and pretend that we haven't done everything we can to make them think that. So they will talk about a story nonstop, day after day after day after day, and then say, hey, there was a protest where people were frustrated about this thing that we got them to be obsessed about. So Trump and Fox News has spent months telling people, you don't need masks, masks are stupid, they probably give you cancer, I don't know, it's unconstitutional, you're gonna be a sheep if you wear a mask, something, something Bill Gates, something, something 5G. Fast forward, some people don't like masks, I don't know, you know, and that's a reason why maybe I shouldn't show any leadership as president. And we know that it is, like, what we have available to us as a country to do something about the pandemic right now, generally masks. It is the most effective, the simplest, the cheapest, the most widely available. It's all of those things simultaneously. The only variable in the equation that we don't have is the willpower, and we don't have that because we're awful as individuals, and those individuals have been told by fundamentally irresponsible people with their own agenda to not wear them. We could have done that. We could have done that, and by now we could probably be largely reopened. We'd still have to be wearing the masks and all of that, whether you're a waiter or not, and we would be okay. But we didn't have that, and so we still lost more than 1,000 people in the last daily reporting. And I've said that, I couldn't tell you how many times. I'm gonna have to tell you that hundreds of times probably on future shows as well, because of idiots like Donald Trump and his complete and utter lack of leadership. Now, let's go to the sort of headline of that town hall, because it's the most consequential. Like the mask stuff, super consequential, but it's baked into the last few months. We're never gonna improve on the mask. So bear in mind, your 2021 is gonna be real fun, by the way, because we're never gonna get better on that. But let's talk now about the overall strategy. What are they actually doing here? So let's transition to this. We've been telling you for literally months that Donald Trump, despite his changing public rhetoric about this, has been curious about, from the very beginning, a herd immunity strategy. Now, he needed to be talked out of this in the early days of the pandemic when he was told by Dr. Fauci and others that that would result in the deaths of literally millions of people. And they have claimed to not be following that. But those claims are starting to fall apart with Donald Trump multiple times in recent days throwing that term or something akin to it into his public addresses. And we now know that his main medical advisor, who's largely pushed out Dr. Fauci, Dr. Atlas, who's not a doctor of infectious disease, by the way, is pursuing this strategy. So now look, it's just worked its way into his everyday conversation. Here you go. Here's Donald Trump on herd mentality.
And we are gonna be okay. We're gonna be okay, and it is going away. And it's probably gonna go away now a lot faster because of the vaccine. It would go away without the vaccine, George, but it's going to go away a lot faster.
Away without the vaccine?
Sure, over a period of time. Sure, with time, it goes
away. And many deaths.
And you'll develop herd, like a herd mentality. It's gonna be herd developed, and that's gonna happen. That will all happen. But with the vaccine, I think it will go away very quickly.
Gotta take a quick
break. But I really believe we're rounding the corner, and I believe that strongly.
As you know, Dr. Fauci disagrees with that.
Well, I mean, but a lot of people do agree with me.
Okay, so that's not quite three strikes, but herd mentality, it's gonna be herd developed. No, that's not the actual term, but honestly, him getting the term wrong doesn't matter in terms of the public health consequences. It matters in terms of the narrative of him being better mentally equipped than Joe Biden to be president, when Donald Trump's brain at this point, I have to assume, is what you would get if you went around the country swirling your pinky in the like the belly button of millions of people and then collecting what you find into a ball and shoving it in his big orange head. That's what he's working with mentally. But anyway, that's not what's important, JR. What's important is that he is 100% pursuing a herd immunity strategy, which I will remind people is a strategy of having no strategy and just letting people get the virus. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm not sure if anybody's hearing what he's saying, Stephanopoulos. I'm not sure if he picked up herd mentality versus herd immunity. Because honestly, it could easily be just a simple slip of the tongue, because there's this term called herd mentality and there's a term called herd immunity, right? Yeah, you can get them mixed up if you're speaking quickly, you're just talking off the cuff. I get that. The problem is when you go and you're hellbent on making, I'd say 90% of your reelection bid to talk about how mentally challenged and senile your opponent is. So if that's the basis for what you wanna do and you talk about all of his gaffes, because yes, Joe Biden throughout his career has a lot of gaffes. If that's your focus, you gotta make sure you don't do it. It's like someone on Twitter. If I'm gonna criticize you for putting the wrong there in your tweet, it's not T-H-E-R-E, it's T-H-E-I-R. If you do that, that means you better not ever make that mistake. That's what happens when you decide to be the grammar police. You cannot make any mistakes, or else you're like, I set myself up for that. So if you're Trump and you're running for president, and you want to talk about someone's mental capacity and their ability to speak, if you mess up, be prepared to have it thrown right back at you.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, if we, I get it. I've got Trump derangement syndrome because I have some semblance of a value system remaining. I get it. I lose it over Trump. Do you have any idea how many of those sorts of gaffes we could play for him literally every single day? When he said that Biden got the Nobel Prize, did we say anything about that? Did we do a video about it? No. Countless times he says insane things. He has no idea what is going on, but we generally give it a pass because there's more important things to focus on. The issue here is that there is potentially nothing more important than this in the short term. If he is actually pursuing this strategy, which again, I hate even using that term because it glorifies what he's actually doing. What he's actually doing is this. Do we have herd mentality yet? Or do we got a herd? Have you heard anything about the mentality? Do we got it? And then maybe someday enough people will have gotten it, enough people will have died that we will have moved past it, assuming you can even do that. And again, that's not even established for this particular virus. He is actually pursuing it, and he's being more and more open to just revealing that as he talks. And I don't think that there can be enough focus on that. There was one or two questions about that. And I know Stephanopoulos did some good follow-ups on a few things, like his attempts to destroy the ACA and things like that. How can you not have more follow-ups on that? Like when they say he spent months saying there were some who wanted to go herd, but I didn't, when all we knew at that point was that he had been talking about it. And now he's just casually saying it. He just drops it into conversation. Like I mentioned the last episode of John Oliver. Like it's just a thing that happens without even realizing it. How can you not respond when the cost is so high?
It doesn't matter to him, because that's when you have this, the situation he has when he only gives a damn about himself. When you can only care about yourself, when anyone else is brought up, you have no other answer except, like, you have to pause and go, wait, what does this have to do with me again? Oh, nothing, okay, I don't care. He just has to find a more artful way of doing that, because that's what most politicians do. He hasn't figured that out.
Okay, well, look, he's an absolute idiot. So why don't we go to an individual who knows what he's talking about, but that I fear every day has less and less influence over the actual strategy and outcome. So Trump talked about the herd mentality, that we're gonna develop a herd brain or something. That means effectively that he is waiting for enough people to have been exposed to the virus and or have a vaccine, that effectively it will be too difficult for the virus to freely propagate from individual individual, and it will sort of wear itself out in the population. The issue with that has been noted many times, maybe 50 times on this show we've gone over the statistics. But let's talk about Dr. Fauci, who earlier this month said if everyone contracted it, even with the relatively high percent of people without symptoms, a lot of people are going to die. Letting the virus spread uncontrollably to achieve herd immunity would bring the death toll to a level that's, quote, totally unacceptable. That's what Dr. Fauci said. He goes on to say, if you look at the United States of America with our epidemic of obesity, as it were, with the number of people with hypertension, with the number of people with diabetes, if everyone got infected, the death toll would be enormous and totally unacceptable. Unacceptable to Dr. Fauci. I'm assuming unacceptable to all of us on either side of this camera, but it appears to be totally acceptable to Donald Trump. I mean, he's accepted 200,000 American deaths sort of officially recorded without batting an eyelash. I mean, if it gets up there to 1 million to 2 million, how much sleep do we think he's going to lose?
New question that needs to be asked every time he says, it is what it is. And I think we've done a great job. I mean, also, you know, Jared Kushner, they all say all this stuff about how awesome it is and the great response we've had. Mike Pence, because he's had to be put in charge of it. All this. So every time they say how great they've done, just ask them, what number, what's our threshold to where it's a bad job? What number should we start criticizing and complaining your response? Is it 250,000? Is it 500,000? Is it 1 million people? Make them put a number on how many people they think can die before they begin to care.
Yeah.
Hit him with that one, because apparently 200,000 is not a problem. But there's plenty of people in this country, maybe the friends and families of 200,000 people, that think that's maybe one too many because of the way that their lives have been affected by it. Make the people that are okay with it answer, when is it not okay?
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we almost had it for today in the email that I sent to you last night. We were going to have it. I'm going to start a series of videos, probably between now and the election, if he gets reelected, maybe longer, called COVID Flashback. And it's going to be playing videos of individuals in the media and Trump administration officials, including Trump, and what they have said over time about the pandemic. And there was one relatively early on, when at one point the COVID death estimates were being revised down, that had a Fox News host sort of like bragging, oh, they said it was gonna be 200,000. Well, it's not even a fraction of that by August. So let's just reopen the economy. Because we do have to remember what these people were saying, what they were advocating for, how they were manipulating what we knew at that time to get the sort of economic outcomes that they wanted. And so we're gonna have that coming up, maybe starting tomorrow, we'll see. But really fast, on the numbers, on herd immunity once again, I wanna give you just a ballpark estimate of what we have to assume at this point is the strategy, at least at the federal government level. States might be taking it more responsibly, some appear to be, but the federal government wants herd immunity. Most scientists think 60 to 80% of the population needs to be vaccinated or have natural antibodies, i.e. be exposed to the virus, to achieve herd immunity. And again, I will add, very few of these articles do. That is assuming that you can develop a relatively long lasting or permanent immunity to this virus, which has not been established, okay? Herd immunity exists for some diseases and not for others for that very reason. All of this conversation is assuming this will be one of those, and perhaps it will, but we don't know. Let's say it is. The coronavirus has infected less than 2% of the US population. This is as of August 13th, and had already killed 167,000 people. That was back in August, 2%. We need 30 to 40 times as many people to be infected. Now, does that mean that the death toll would be 30 to 40 times higher? Perhaps not, but it would be a lot higher than it is now. And it is not in any way an exaggeration to say that millions of people will die if we pursue this as a national strategy. Now, some of those people can get the vaccine, assuming a vaccine does actually come, that it's made available, that it's affordable, and all of that, and it actually works. We don't know any of those things yet. Yeah. But we do know that what we have before the vaccine is a strategy of the herd mentality.
John, all you did was go through a normal logical explanation, and honestly a dive, not even a deep dive, a dive into how something like this works. So if you're gonna throw on the term like herd immunity, and certain numbers of people need to get it, and it'll all be fine once this happens, like they've been pushing, you have to understand those very simple things. Because they're also bragging, by the way, this is where their arguments collide. They're arguing about how few, as far as the entire population, actually have it. That's like a victory lap for them, right? And then when you talk about the fatality rate, case fatality rate, all those things that they're bragging about, in order to have your herd mentality slash immunity, Donald Trump, you gotta infect a lot more people. Are people volunteering to be infected? Are people volunteering to take this unproven vaccine that you are claiming is coming out in the next 2 weeks? All these things that you're talking about happening that haven't happened yet. If you think you're gonna get to a logical endpoint, you have to think out the full equation. All you did, John, was go through the equation. This is what our administration of the United States of America has not fully vetted out, is the equation. It's not super calculus. It's like addition. It's just this plus this plus that equals that. In order to get to our last point, we have to add these three things together. And those three things are just completely overlooked, because we just honestly don't care about getting to that last point.
Well, JR, you think you're so clever, but I can answer one of those. Are people volunteering to be exposed? Some, they were at a rally over the weekend. They're gonna be in Target in a video we're gonna show people a little bit later on. Some people are volunteering.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Even as Donald Trump's town hall last night was going on, the reactions were rolling in, and it was mostly, you know, sort of centered around him having trouble coming up with the right words, him looking just terrible as he's trying to talk over people. He has no ability to talk about policy and all that. It was a disaster. And many people were wondering, who okayed this? Why would he do this town hall? He is so ill prepared to answer direct questions without someone like a Jeanine Pirro, like being the bumpers on the duck pin bowling that is his brain. And it looked terrible. How do you know it's terrible? Take a look at Laura Ingraham, her immediate reaction, how she tried to characterize this town hall.
The DNC may as well have put the whole thing on.
You should know that some of these people voted for you last time around. Some voted for Hillary Clinton.
Why did you throw vulnerable people like me under the bus?
Why don't you support a mandate for national mask wearing? And why don't you wear a mask more often?
Why would you downplay a pandemic that is known to disproportionately harm low-income families and minority communities?
And then there was this moment.
Should pre-existing conditions, which Obamacare brought to fruition, be removed?
No.
Please stop and let me finish my question, sir. Should that be removed?
I hope you are taken seriously. I hope you are. And we are not going to hurt anything having to do with pre-existing conditions. They will not do that because they have socialized.
I have to stop you.
You've been trying to strike down pre-existing conditions.
I have it already, and it's a much better plan for you, and it's a much better plan.
Okay, so you could see in the little chyron, it was an ambush against Donald Trump. So I have some thoughts, Jared, but what do you think about that? Seems okay. A tad defensive.
I'll let you go with the ambush because I want to hear your thoughts on it first. But so this is similarly to letting a guy talk to someone. That's all it is. He's talking, and that's an ambush. Again, I was trying not to go to the ambush because I'll follow up on you. I want to point out a couple of specifics about how Laura Ingraham is trying to pose this, right? As we're watching it, if you listen to it without any bias, at the end of it, you go, man, he's really lying about that pre-existing condition line. Because she's playing what he said, and this is supposed to sound like he's the victim, he's been set up, these vicious Americans are asking him questions. But specifically about that part, she went through three questions from previous people that she found disturbing, but made sure to come back to her. This is all production. This is a plan. I say this all the time. When Tucker Carlson talks, when Sean Hannity talks, and all these guys talk, they're reading from a teleprompter. Every syllable that they say is being put in front of them on a teleprompter, and they read it. Whatever part of it they had in writing it, yeah, they have varying levels of it. I get it. But as they come back to Laura Ingraham to make sure, she points out this lady right here next to me, her question goes, and then here's this moment. This is a specifically bad moment. Do you know why? Because this uppity black lady decided to interrupt your president when he was trying to interrupt her in the middle of her question. This is specifically a bad moment in this town hall. This lady decides to interrupt your president, who's more important than her. That's all that was for. And can you believe it? She's gonna disrespect your president. This is the basis for their base. This is what their base believes in. This is what their base likes about him from the beginning. His hatred, his racism for certain people. And now look at what this country's become. A black woman decides to interrupt your president. That's all that was saying. Now, you don't have to say it directly, because now when someone like me points out what your message was there, you go, oh, look at them always crying racism. Hey, the racism starts with you pulling off something like that. It's just how it was. What other reason do you have for specifically pointing out that moment, which is the same as another constituent asking a question of this president and interrupting him? The point is She interrupted him. What an uppity black woman this is.
100%. As soon as I saw it, I thought, if the exact same interaction happened and that was a white woman, there's like a 25% chance that it was in that montage. It's not 50. Yeah, how dare she? Because she was doing what everyone needs to do. Don't let Donald Trump just steamroll you, because he doesn't want you to follow up and call him out on his BS, to quote him, all of that. He just wants to keep talking, so don't let him. She shouldn't. He's there to answer their questions. That's what he came for. Let them ask their questions. But so Ingram must have thought that that little montage effectively communicated her point, that this is an ambush. But really, it being an ambush is entirely dependent on how unfair or perhaps biased in their framing the questions are. We've seen questions like that. I don't remember, it was back in 2016, I think, in the primary. Bernie Sanders was asked a question from a Fox News host, I think it was a Fox News host, about socialism and Cuba and all this. And it was just so obviously fake, conflating these two things. What Donald Trump got was questions like, why don't you support a mask mandate? Okay, you may not like that, Laura Ingram, because you don't think that people should wear masks or socially distance. You've been saying that for months, but the doctors all say that we should be wearing masks. So that seems like a perfectly fair question. Why did he leave people to die? Okay, that's a harsh question, but 200,000 people have died. So hardly surprising that voters would have that question on their minds. Why did you downplay the virus? Okay, that's inconvenient. I could see that, but it was your boy's own words that said that. He said that to Bob Woodward. So how's that an ambush? Did he ambush himself with Bob Woodward? These are not unfair questions. And the pre-existing conditions thing, okay, you may not like it, but Donald Trump and the Republican Party have been trying to remove protections for pre-existing conditions. They didn't support the ACA, which was the first protections for those, and they've been trying to destroy it. They tried it in the first year of Trump's administration. They thankfully failed, but they tried, and right now, they have a case before the Supreme Court that would destroy the ACA. Now, Trump would say, I will then produce a new protection. And you'll see it in 2 weeks, by the way. He always says that. George Stephanopoulos at some point called him out on that for repeatedly saying, it'll be 2 weeks, it'll be 3 weeks, going back, interview, year after year after year, saying, I'm gonna have a healthcare plan. Well, where is it? Is it an ambush to want him to finally make good on a promise that he's been promising for literally years? That is only an ambush if you have literally no standards whatsoever for this politician. He has walked into every single one of those questions and 1,000 more with his callous disregard for the American people during this pandemic. So she can whine that she doesn't like it. I get it. He sucked. I wouldn't like it either if he was my politician, but that doesn't make it an ambush, and that doesn't make that an effective segment.
Anytime the truth, or at least reality, is seen as synonymous with an ambush, and that's your party and that's your president, hey, this is a problem. It's like the truth has been told, or reality is striking him. What an ambush. That means the reality is we allow him to get away with lies. So George Stephanopoulos stepping in and saying, hey, actually what you did say about pre-existing conditions is the opposite of what you're saying right now. That's an ambush to speak a fact about what someone is just lying about. So what you want is for a politician to be able to lie and no one call it out. Keep it real, just say it. Just say it. What happened to the days of allowing a politician to lie right in front of me, blatantly and easily debunked, and just not do it? What happened to those days?
Yeah.
That's what you're longing for. This is what makes America great again means. Let's go back to those days.
Yeah, and by the way, at last night's town hall, he said that he would have an immigration plan in 2 to 3 weeks. So someone watching, can you remind me in 2 to 3 weeks? I'm sure we'll be reviewing the detailed proposal at that time. Lots of lies though, you want one more lie? I think the lie above all other lies, the crowning lie achievement. This morning, Donald Trump tweeted, thank you for the great reviews of the ABC News show last night. No, there wasn't. No, there wasn't. Dude, your girl had a breakdown because of how unfair it was to make you look so bad. There were no great reviews, you big dummy liar.
It's the same as saying, I want to thank Bob Woodward for the amazing book. Talk about all the amazing things I've been doing.
Exactly. Yeah, and his lie that he had read it in one day, this like almost 500 page book. By the way, we're not doing it as a story, but there was another update about his intelligence briefings. And it was more detailed. It said, you know, they'd long ago, they jettisoned the full briefings that like Obama would read, detailed information about the state of the world. And they had instead turned to bullet points, which we've known for a long time. But they said that they were growing sort of like concerned about whether even the bullet points would work because they had started to produce cards of three bullet points and they said they could never get him past two. Yeah, he read the 500 page book in one night, I think. Anyway. God.
I didn't know about the bullet points and cards thing, man. That's depressing.
Imagine if Marissa is one of our producers. Let's say that she goes on to another job someday and she's like, you know, I would produce these interviews for John. And like, it was like, I had to fit something good in the first bullet point because there was no chance that big idiot was getting the second one. Like, can you imagine?
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. Don't do that, please, Marissa. Okay.
How much she pays me for that, I'll totally vouch for it. I mean, it's a six-figure type of payment, but I'll back it up.
Oh God. Yesterday on the show, we talked about the ICE facility whistleblower, Don Wooten, who was talking about both the complete negligence when it comes to COVID, but also the apparent epidemic of needless and non-consensual hysterectomies that have been performed on detainees. That whistleblower has now been on TV last night on Chris Hayes' show. Want to show you just a few of her comments about what she was exposed to in her time at the facility.
You have detained women. I had several detained women on numerous occasions that would come to me and say, Miss Wooten, I had a hysterectomy. Why? I had no answers as to why they had those procedures. And one lady walked up to me here this last time around between October of 19 until July the 2nd. And she said, what is he? Is he the uterus collector? Does he collect uteruses? And I asked her, what does she mean? And she says, everybody that I talked to has had a hysterectomy. And you just don't know what to say. I mean, I don't have a answer for why that they would come to me and they would say, is he the uterus collector?
Yeah, so yesterday on the show, Gary Chambers and I, we speculated about a few of the reasons they could be doing this. None of them are good. Some more horrifying and theoretically genocidal and eugenics based than others. But it, from what we have heard from this whistleblower, it is apparently happening. We will find out more. We now have, I'm going to jump ahead. Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, is demanding a probe. 160 Democrats have signed on to that. I'm sure other Republicans, the pro-lifers, are going to be really concerned about this and they're going to join. So supposedly an investigation will be done. Perhaps we will learn something about this, if these procedures are being done, if they're actually being logged and all of that. The entire thing, JR, is just absolutely horrific.
Yo, this is one of those things where, if you say it without any kind of evidence or without anyone coming out and saying it, if you even speculate and go, you know what, it's kind of, I wouldn't put it past them to start pulling out mass hysterectomies of these women because of the things that they've always said about these women and this group of people that they've now have housed and treat like garbage. We talk about even the things that happened in the facility with the lack of COVID preparedness and safety when it comes around them. So if they don't care about their lives in that aspect, they definitely don't care about any potential reproduction that they can pull off. Now, this isn't something that started with Trump, as we know. Now, this policy potentially with ICE may have, but the Republican Party and Republican pundits and conservatives have been talking for years about how white people are getting outpaced by Latinos in this country, and soon we're gonna be the minority. They're having babies at a faster rate. We gotta start having babies. I think it's, Steve King may have been one of those on that as well, but there was definitely pundits that talk about it and other politicians that wanna refill our coffers of white babies because we're getting outdone by Latinos. We're losing, is basically the way they put it. Now, throughout history, we know that this country's done things with sterilization of particular women. I wanna point out this one part that I read in this piece. There was legislation put in place. The reason behind it was to get rid of certain people and their horrible traits. So really fast, legislation that was motivated was there was crude theories of human hereditary that posited the wholesale inheritance of traits associated with a bunch of feared conditions, criminality, feeble-mindedness, sexual deviance. So these types of traits were attributed to black and brown people in this country, and therefore they sterilized these women systemically the way they just decided to do it. So let's remember back to when this president stepped up on that stage after riding down the escalator. What did he say about Latinos? They're rapists, they're murderers. They're coming over our country to take over and whatever to do to your people and your family. Went through three or four straight negative stereotypical traits that racists believe about a certain group of people. That now when you've got them all housed in this facility, you're starting to sterilize many of them to make sure that you get rid of those traits. It's just, we're replaying history. So if you believe as a racist, this is why it's dangerous to elect a rabid racist as the president of the United States. They will carry out their beliefs in policy. It's happening right in front of you. But when people came out like us and complained about the way he talks about these people, then we get told, oh, snowflake, oh, he's just speaking the truth. He's trying to protect the country. This has led to this, these types of policies that they think are just fine and dandy because this matches up to the end game, which is to limit the number of these people with the wrong genes, white supremacist type of language, from having more children that embody those horrible stereotypes. Yeah. It's just all it is to it.
Yeah, and look, obviously we need the investigation. We can speculate. We don't know exactly how many were done. But considering what has been done at these facilities just during the Trump administration, there are very good reasons to be incredibly concerned about this. We know how little care there has been in these sorts of facilities to protect people from the spread of COVID. There's been sexual assaults. There's been abuse. There's been deporting individuals who are about to give testimony. Like, all of these things are context that we also have to bear in mind when hearing what this whistleblower has to say. Obviously, we need an investigation and more information. And in terms of the speculation, like the idea that this, like all of what JR just said, like it is an indisputable fact that our government has conducted things like this in the past, that many other governments have done that. If you believe that there is something fundamentally changed about America 2020, that means we could not do this, that the Trump administration would not do these things in the same way that our government and other governments have, feel free, more power to you. I don't see it. Now, we do still have to wait for the information. I'm not interested in speaking definitively about things that I don't know, but I do know what America is and has been. That's what I know. Thankfully, we do have some good politicians. So I want to jump ahead to these quotes from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She tweeted, "It's astounding that after a massive family separation operation, mass sexual assault of detainees, trapping immigrants in COVID infected detention centers, and now reports of mass hysterectomies, which the US has done before, abolishing ICE is controversial. Where's the line?" And I saw also that she had quote retweeted Emma Vigeland, who's talking about this, about the fact that that was considered radical a year or two ago, saying it wasn't just the right wing that thought so. "The reason I didn't choose a more comfortable term for targeting and detaining groups largely by ethnicity without trial in camps with malnutrition, sexual assault, permanent psychological trauma, and bodily harm is because we shouldn't be comfortable about it." That was, in fact, one of the things that we talked about when she was on this show. She had just come back from one of those camps on the border. This is, you know, like, are we supposed to assume that things have gotten better? I mean, how many kids are still lost and unaccounted for? How many sexual assaults are happening literally as I'm doing this report right now? Is that doctor, what, is he not going to collect uteruses in the future? If we're going to get to that point, it is going to require strong action. And I think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez should be, you know, part of the leadership in this investigation. Hopefully Nancy Pelosi doesn't move on after a day or two because the cost is so absolutely significant.
Yeah, one last thing on this is also unlimited amount of props need to be given to this particular whistleblower, as people keep talking about whenever a whistleblower comes out, say their name, why don't they identify themselves? Her name is Dawn Wooten. And also, oh, they're just doing this because they're a disgruntled ex-employee and they just want to get some get back. Hey, and they want to make some money off of this. I'm looking for her book that she's promoting as she's talking about this. No, she's doing it for all the right reasons. She's talking about the issues that are happening on her watch and what she's seen is happening in our government. And then is also not doing it and waiting until a certain point to promote a book to do so. And she has her name out there. As dangerous as that is, and how many death threats she's probably now getting over this, Because if you ask, oh, why don't they identify themselves? I'm sure she can give you a laundry list of reasons why she probably shouldn't have identified herself, but she did anyway because she's braver than the rest of these guys. Now, and honestly, I'd be okay if she was anonymous, because we know the response that she's gonna get. We know that's the reason why they want to identify her. We know all that, but she did anyway because she's actually doing these things for the right reasons.
Exactly. And you know, I don't know if Skip, you can go back to it, but we have a tweet from the Government Accountability Project, which apparently has been working with Dawn Wooten. There was already a fake Twitter account that had to be suspended that got over 8,000 followers pretending to be Dawn Wooten to, I guess, convince people that she was doing this for purely political reasons. I don't know if you can read the text there at the bottom, but it describes her as someone who hates Trump, a single mother of five who supports Black Lives Matter. So you can see what they're trying to target her around. Because remember, fundamentally, we are dealing with people who don't give a damn about what is true and real. They think, wouldn't it be easier to discount her if it was political? And then they look, they can't find anything, so they just make it up. They just make it up. Jer and I would literally never, like, imagine if we made up like a fake Stephen Miller TikTok account to pretend that he is what we say that he, like, we'd never do it. Because fundamentally, we care about what's true. But there are a million foot soldiers in their army that doesn't give a damn about what's actually true. They want what's convenient and persuasive so that they can maintain their stranglehold on political power. That's what it is. And so again, this is just a fake account, but you don't think Dawn Wooten's getting death threats as we speak? 100% she is. Ugh. And look, we'll find out. Is she right? She could be wrong about some of this stuff. I don't know. I don't know her. I have no dog in this fight, except that I want an investigation and I care about what happens to these individuals, which is a fundamental difference from some of the people who are attacking her right now. They don't give a damn what happens to these women in those facilities. Okay, let's move directly on to the next story. I guess in some weird way, this is funny, I suppose, but also scary. So let's move to this. So we've shown you a number of different videos of anti-maskers going into retail locations to complain about the fact that they have to wear one. But take a look at this. This is a video from Target. A group of what looks like young white anti-mask activists stampeding through a Target and yelling at people to take off their masks.
Take your mask off!
Yeah, take it off!
Idiot.
Yeah, so that happened in, I believe it was Florida, shockingly. Florida, which was incredibly hard hit by the virus. I had a family member die from COVID in a Florida hospital. And that's what some Floridians think about this pandemic, that it's some kind of joke. You just run around in Target and have fun and possibly infect people with their disease. And and also, by the way, in the same way that you're ripping your mask off, you're also ripping a mask off on the, well, I just don't want to be obligated to do it, because they weren't just shouting, I won't wear one. They were yelling at people to take off their masks. People who have already shown that they're perfectly willing to do it. They don't want anyone to wear one, not just them.
Yeah, I mean, you walk into a business establishment which can set forth any rules they want for how people come in. And as long as it's not discriminatory about who they are and where they came from and, you know, their makeup, their human makeup, you can tell someone there's rules about you coming in the store. Walking with no shoes on, walking with no shirt on. We don't want your diseased feet walking around on our floors where we then have to clean up behind you and potentially spread your diseased foot virus all over the place. So there's rules that have always been in place by stores, and it's their prerogative to do so. And if you don't want to go in because you just can't stand to put on socks and shoes on your nasty feet, then fine, don't come in. Shop somewhere else. Shop at the Target alternative that allows you to walk in with no shoes on. That's the way it works. Hey, so if you're mad at Target for making you wear a mask, don't go to Target. Now, what I want to hear is a questioning of conservatives and specifically elected officials about what they think about their people going through a Target and yelling at other patrons about their decisions about wearing masks. Because I remember when perceived to be protesters were walking around and yelling at people outside of cafes to stop eating there, join the protest, what are you doing? And what did a bunch of Democrats and libs say? Oh, I'm sorry, those guys shouldn't have done that, my fault. Hey, I wanna apologize for them. Hey, they don't represent all of us. Hey, certain people out here yelling at people on the street, that's not the way to convince people to come to our side. I'm waiting for the Republicans and conservatives to then start denouncing and rejecting these folks that walked into Target screaming in everyone's face, telling them what to do, because that's the same thing. When is Ted Cruz gonna come out and say, you know what, I like to denounce and reject these radical conservatives that walk through a Target yelling at people about what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And by the way, it doesn't represent us. That doesn't represent us. That's no way to get people on our side. When is that conversation gonna be had? No, instead, we're always complaining and we're always denouncing and rejecting people. We do it here specifically at TYT. We always worry about what someone else on the street said to someone, and oh, that's no way to approach and get people on your side. No, I'm over that. Yeah, it's wrong that they did it, and that's where we're gonna stop. That has nothing to do with me, because I wasn't out on the streets telling people to sit up, to get up from their cafes and join the movement. No, that wasn't me, so I have nothing to say about it. Same way conservatives have nothing to say about this.
Yeah. Although, who knows? I mean, if one of those people's identified, they're probably on Tucker Carlson and he'll talk about how they're American hero. I can only imagine, like, if you're one of the workers, like, you have to work at Target, like, you're already being exposed. We already know how many retail workers have died, and that band of, you know, hashtag herd mentality coming in, like, scale. Like, let's say I were to tell you just one fact about an individual, and you have to tell me how that influences you on a scale of 1 to 10, how serious you think they are otherwise about the virus. They run through Target yelling at people to take off their masks. How serious do you think they take the virus? What are the chances that they have COVID right then? I think it's safe to say higher than normal. And they're running up on people, and those people hypothetically could get sick. I'm sure you've all seen the reports of there was an in-person wedding in Maine. And contact tracing has now identified 7 individuals who died as a result of that. Not people, by the way, who were at the wedding, but people who were infected by people who were at the wedding are dead now. 7 individuals, because they decided to have this wedding. Every event in a pandemic can have consequences. Maybe you'll be lucky, you know, it's Russian roulette or whatever. Maybe you won't kill anyone, but maybe someone will die as a result of what you just saw there. And bear in mind, many people are still dying. Let's do what we do virtually every day. Here's the most recent reporting from the COVID tracking project. Yesterday, 1,031 deaths were reported. More than 1,000 Americans died. Again, I can't tell you how many times I've now said more than 1,000 Americans have died in the most recent reporting. And I'm gonna say it over and over and over again. Maybe someday someone will go through and mash it up, because 1,000 plus people are still dying every day. It's been more than half a year, and we're still losing that many people. Why? I don't think it's totally unfair to say, because of videos like we just showed you. And it seems to only be getting worse. You probably saw the video of the cops who went to a college party, like that a bunch of people, you're only supposed to have like 10 people in a building. They had like 50. The guy who was throwing the party was positive with COVID. He told the guy, yeah, no, I was tested, I was positive. And they were like, well, aren't you supposed to be quarantining? He's like, yeah, I am with them, the 50 people that are also unmasked and possibly have COVID. Like, and this is just all over the place. last thing, and again, we alluded to this yesterday on the show. Right now, you have a couple different sorts of protests going on, as we've talked about many times. You have people who are being gassed and run over by police cruisers and being shot in the head with non-lethal munitions to push for people's civil rights. And then you have people who are rampaging through Target telling other people to take off their masks. The wide range of experiences in America, different sorts of different sorts of concern. That's what we've got. guests onto the show is that I get exposed to information, topics, ways of life, perspectives, and all of that that I would never have come across otherwise. And I think we potentially have one of the best examples of that in a very long time with an author joining us now to talk about a topic that I have really never thought about in any sort of critical or even relatively deep way. So let's broach that today as we're joined by the author of Here She Is, The Complicated Reign of the Beauty Pageant in America, sociologist from Brown University, Hillary Levy Friedman. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you on. So this is about pageants, but it's really a lens that you're using to look at feminism in America over the past century or so.
Even more than that, I really started in 1848 at Seneca Falls. A lot of people don't know P.T. Barnum started the first beauty contest in the United States in the 1840s and kid beauty contest too. So it starts there and goes all the way up to present day.
That is fascinating. So I'm from Bridgeport, Connecticut. So P.T. Barnum is all up in that. I had no idea that, I mean, why not? He's done literally everything else. So let's talk about the evolution over the time. You have a long time frame here that you're talking about. Where do sort of modern or even relatively modern ideas of feminism start to creep into it? It seems like initially that wasn't necessarily one of the driving forces behind setting these up.
Well, the book is organized around what I refer to as the three waves of feminism. So sort of the biggest success of the first wave of feminism was the ratification of the 19th Amendment, celebrating the 100th anniversary this year. And about a year later, the Miss America pageant starts. And if you've ever wondered why pageant contestants wear sashes, they got those from the suffragists. So that's a whole interesting story. So right there, we see a very strong connection. And then one of the biggest events in second wave feminism was in September 1968, when the New York radical women organized a Zap protest right outside of the Miss America pageant. And it's seen as one of the first really organized and public moments of second wave feminism. And then there's lots of ties to what I call third wave feminism after the election of Trump, who of course used to own Miss Universe and Miss USA, but in the Me Too movement and links to Gretchen Carlson as well. So it, you know, beauty pageants really are a lens to see this arc of feminist history in America.
Wow, yeah. And if people want more information about one of, I think, the most interesting links is what you said about the sash. I know that you have an op-ed available on the New York Times about that. So yeah, I wasn't sure how long I'd go before I'd mentioned Donald Trump, but obviously before he was, you know, the occupant of the White House, he had this long history with pageants. How does he play into this sort of the interlinking of the pageant world with feminism?
Well, for sure, what Donald Trump did when he was owner, which he has admitted to, and then many of the contestants have talked about, really fulfills some of the worst stereotypes about beauty pageants. So here's a man who owns the pageant, and he would go backstage and sort of, in his own words, he would inspect the goods. And even some of the former beauty queens who are very supportive of him, like Carrie Prejean, who was Miss California USA, you may recall, because there was a big brouhaha that she said she didn't believe in same-sex marriage, and she was named first runner-up. So anyway, even she said he came one day and he divided the contestants between hot and not. And she was like, this is in her memoir. She said she was glad to be in the hot group, but she felt sorry for the people who were in the not. So really, Donald Trump fulfills those stereotypes. Miss USA and Miss Universe has a very specific history that it is explicitly a beauty pageant, always has that swimsuit component because of how it started. And so Donald Trump is actually a really bad example and somewhat a rare example, because the pageant world tends to be dominated by women and not by men.
So is that, you know, behind the scenes as well as on the stage in terms of organizing it, promoting it, profiting from it, for all of that, that is more leaning towards women?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will say this is, beauty pageants are terrible because women are being judged by men and evaluated based on how they look. And there's lots and lots of truth in that. But one of the things I do in Here She is I take these sort of stereotypes and these claims very seriously, and I collected a lot of data. So I collected all the program books from the 1970s to the present for Miss USA, Miss America, and some others as well, and looked at the makeup of the judges panel. So actually a vast majority of judges are women and not men. Now, of course, at home, there may be men judging the women on how they look on their TV screens. But even there, starting as early as the 1950s and 60s, when these pageants went on TV, the majority of the viewing audience has been women.
I have to say that's fascinating. I certainly would not have expected that. I mean, Donald Trump is probably the most high profile person I know of that's associated with one of these. And so I guess that has certainly biased my opinion of it over time. And so I know that you talk about sort of some of the positive and some of the negative around these and how it's helped to provide more exposure for women and all of that. So, I mean, I guess taking the long view of going back, you know, a century plus, have things been changing in a positive way? I mean, the pageants are still here. They don't appear to be going anywhere, which would not have been my prediction if you'd asked me a couple of decades ago. Is it transforming ever more into a force that, like, a positive force?
Well, I think it depends on which pageant you're talking about, because there is a great deal of variation. But let me flip the politics example from Trump to something that's a little bit perhaps more positive, which is that a lot of state winners from Miss America are now going on to run for elected office. So just for example, there's two former Miss Hawaii's running right now for the Hawaii legislature. One's a Republican who's an incumbent and one is a Democrat. So we see the ways in which pageants have become more serious, specifically the Miss America pageant, and politics has maybe moved a bit toward the entertainment sphere and sort of short sound bites and how you look and all of those things have become ever more important. And so I think as American womanhood has changed, so too have these beauty pageants. So I can think of a few things. I mean, when Miss America's 100th anniversary actually happens now, these women are going to be expected to be pursuing advanced degrees, have a cause that they are publicly organizing and speaking out on. They have to have a talent, but they also have to do it while wearing 6-inch heels and fake eyelashes. And, you know, is that really that different than what we expect from a lot of high school girls I know, where it's like, be, you know, socially active on Instagram, but do it with your pictures modeling all the right angles and that sort of thing. So I think Miss America in particular captures this complicated moment that we are in for American women.
You know, you mentioned there about the experience of some American female teens. What about the dichotomy? You have, you know, Miss America, Miss USA and all of that. You also have these youth pageants. What do you think about that and how it ties into this history that you've explored?
Well, the child pageants in practice today are quite separate from what are referred to as the Miss pageants, like Miss America and Miss USA. However, historically, they're super linked. So mentioned P.T. Barnum from your hometown. When he had all these best poultry contests, best dog contests, even best flower, he was like, oh, I'm going to do this for the women. I'm going to do a most handsome woman contest. But in fact, it was one of the few times he misread the zeitgeist and there was this huge uproar. What proper woman, what respectable woman would present herself in public? So he pivoted to make that a photo contest. But he then started these baby contests, the most beautiful baby contests. Now, of course, a baby cannot go up in public or on stage by themselves. And so the moms actually had to carry them. And that is part of what made it acceptable for a woman to be on stage and a woman to be judged in public. So their histories are really interlinked. But in practice today, there aren't a lot of people who were big on the child beauty pageant circuit, as it's known, who would go on to necessarily be crowned Miss America or Miss USA or Miss Universe for that matter.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. And so that initial exposure, I mean, you're talking about people running for office literally now that maybe get some of that same sort of training and how to present yourself, how to communicate and all of that. That is very fascinating. So just for context, I just have a couple of quick questions because I'm an idiot and I don't know anything. Are there other countries that have similar histories in pageantry like this? Is this something that you can find all over the place?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of developing countries are sort of pageant mad. So the Philippines would be one example. Pageants are huge in India. Pageants are huge in South America. And so there are different markets. But in fact, this path toward politics, we can see in many examples in South American countries, because if you win, it's this big platform for a woman in the same way that, like, being a quarterback or something might be a big platform for a man. We have lots of athletes who have transitioned to political careers. So definitely the ways in which pageants can be a path to social mobility for some is true in other places. Of course, our history is specific in terms of when women got the right to vote and protest and all of that. But the path in the United Kingdom, for example, is much more similar to the United States.
Interesting. And is that a relatively new thing, or does it go back in the same sort of time frame of what you're analyzing here in America?
No, it goes back a ways. Miss World actually started in England before Miss Universe did. This was in the 40s and the 50s. So there's definitely a history, but today it's more like an export of the United States. If you think about a show like Toddlers and Tiaras, if you remember when that was on TLC, that was exported to like Australia, for example, and then the child beauty pageant circuit got much bigger in Australia. But of course, those are sort of déclassé now in the United States, the child pageants, even on TV. So it's a bit of a mix, but we can definitely identify hotspots and sort of the trends go up and down in terms of what's popular at a given time. I often find that there's an inverse relationship between the kid pageants and the Miss pageants. When one's doing well, the other one isn't.
So based on like you appear to know literally as much as anyone in the world about these trends over time. Looking forward, where do you see it going? What changes do you think are likely?
Well, as you said, a few decades ago, you might have thought these things will not continue to exist. So I believe that beauty culture is deeply embedded, particularly in American society. I mean, to me, The Bachelor is the new Miss America, and millions of people watch The Bachelor when it's on every week. So I don't see that aspect of beauty contest culture going away. Now, do I think Miss America in its current form will be around for 100 years? Probably not. And do I think it will be on TV even a decade from now? I'm not so sure, but that doesn't mean it's not worthwhile for the participants. I sort of joke, no one says the Rhodes Scholarship isn't important, but would people want to watch those interviews on TV? Like, is that entertainment? Maybe for some people, but probably not for most.
I'd give it a try.
I mean, I don't know how long it lasts, honestly, but we might be a little bit of outliers there.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, we're gonna have to check in 10 years and we'll see if that prediction has come true. But for now, thank you so much for joining us. The book is Here She Is, The Complicated Reign of the Beauty Pageant in America. Hillary Levy Friedman, thank you so much for joining us. Very fascinating work you've put together there.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.